From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I feel like I just left. Brian Kilmeade Show moving through this weekend. It feels like a week already with the pace in which Donald Trump is keeping. We all are feeling it. I'm loving it. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West will talk about the border. Get this. Only 200 people are trying to cross the border. 200 people a week in a day. That is unbelievable. 44 gotaways. We were seeing 8,000. Alina Habba in 15 minutes said that'll be great. But bring us inside the White House. So we have that going on today, and we also have Thursday is going to be the UK Prime Minister after President of France came and left yesterday. But, man, what a productive trip he had. Legitimate conversations. The one thing that sticks out with me is when these European leaders first got a hold of Trump, they knew little about him. And they were being told by John Kerry and others, he wasn't going to last. This is not going to last. Like, Russia put him there. He didn't really win. Hillary Clinton really won. You know, she had the popular vote. This is just a freak thing. And then not only did he last, he made a huge impact. And in the beginning, people wanted to minimize him. And remember, they caught off mic moment with Trudeau and Macron sitting down with, I think, Boris Johnson. And they're standing up at a cocktail party mocking Trump for having such long press conferences when they're stuck there with him. Man, things have changed. Big three.
Number three.
In less than a month, illegal crossings down 95%. We had about 1,800 a day in 2023. You know how many had yesterday? 48. I'm not going to be happy if that number is zero.
Well, we're getting there, Tom Homan, winning. That's what Tom Homan and Donald Trump are doing at the border while cracking down in the country. Their greatest obstacle is actually coming from the inside. I'll explain.
Number two.
What they're doing is they're trying to find out who's working for the government. Are we paying other people that aren't working? And, you know, where is all this? Where's the money going? I think it was actually, there was a lot of genius in sending it. We're trying to find out if people are working.
What's wrong with that? DOGE, front and center, cost cutting continues. Nobody seems to want anything cut near them, but they like the idea. While Trump's plan to let Musk lead the way looks smarter every day, I'll explain that.
Number one.
The Ukrainians, the Russians, the American interests, that's a complex system, and the best things are done quietly. I'm less concerned about what people say out loud, and more importantly, that they're working towards achieving that objective, which is deeply in America's interest.
Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State and CIA director, weighing in on Ukraine-Russia war and the prospects of peace. Critical week for sustainable peace. Not just to cease fire, but doing something that would make Russia pay attention and let them pay a price if they decide to break the peace. Macron comes to town, as I mentioned, to warn Trump. You're on the right track, but Vladimir Putin can't be trusted. And he said it. He goes, look, I was the last one to talk to Vladimir Putin in 2022. And we talked for 7 hours. Can you imagine this? 7 hours. At which time he left thinking that, you know, he was going to think twice about invading. He invaded anyway. And then they had a 2014 peace agreement. Was none of these leaders were in place. But they broke that anyway. Let alone all the infiltrating into Moldova and the Baltics, the cutting of the cables in the ocean, you know, the rattling the cage of the new NATO members of Finland and Sweden. So there's so many moving parts. I'm willing to step back and watch. I'm not going to give you an opinion every day because we have to think long term. You have to think long term. What is the hope? Now, the objective of Trump is simple. I don't care about legacy and diplomacy and history. I want this fight to end, and I want it to be sustainable. And we spent, he says $300 billion, but it's more like $150 billion. I want to be able to get it back through some rare earth deal, which, by the way, China's virtually cut us off from. So now that rare earth deal could be coming through this week. Zelensky could be coming to Washington this week. That would be great. And then you have Vladimir Putin, who's dealing with the president of the United States directly and has emissaries. Lavrov showed up against Secretary of State Marco Rubio. That shows how seriously he took the Saudi Arabian meeting. Cut four.
I've spoken to President Putin, and my people are dealing with him constantly, and his people in particular. And they want to do something. I mean, that's what I do. I do deals. My whole life is deals. That's all I know is deals. And I know when somebody wants to make it and when somebody doesn't.
So, and I think the European Union is exactly right. They're using Trump's legitimate statements that we're not going to be sitting there watching their back if they're not going to spend more than 5% of their GDP on their defense. We're not going to do it. It's up for Europeans now. It's been 80 years since World War II to start paying for their own defense. I think it's a win-win. Roger Wicker talked about this in his revamp of the Pentagon. What you do is you arm our allies with friends and families discounts, financing plans in order to use our weaponry, which of course will be compatible with everything that we have, our maintenance contracts, everything that we have. We do coordinated military exercises, and the West begins to stand up for itself. It's good for your collective self-esteem, and it's also good to know that you got to be able to stand up for yourself. The bad news for America is we lose some influence in those areas where we don't necessarily, they need us as much. I mean, look at Poland. My goodness, they're paying more than anybody else for their defense. I'm not saying they don't need us. They actually want a military base there. But you collectively get our allies to stand up for themselves and buy our equipment. And for those Eastern Europeans who are newly members of the Western Alliance, get rid of all the Russian Soviet stuff. We can't replace it. We can't fix it. I don't want you dealing with them. You have to deal with us. And why that wasn't I just don't think that should have been a priority of NATO when you came in. I'm not using MiGs. I don't know how to work those tanks, those Russian tanks. They suck anyway. Use our stuff. But the problem with the peace talks with Vladimir Putin is he's the evil person of this generation. He's the Stalin. He's the Mao. Don't let anybody kid you. But can you be trusted? No. So how do you make sure that we don't sign off ceasefire again, like in Georgia and they stay, and in Ukraine they stay, and the Ukraine they attack? We sign these peace deals and keep moving. So Macron says, watch out. Cut 7.
Everybody has in mind all the losses and casualties and what the Ukrainian people lived during the past 3 years. And they've been very brave. And they just protected their territory and their sovereignty. And I think the arrival of President Trump is a game changer. And I think he has the deterrence capacity of the U.S. to re-engage with Russia. So I think it's feasible. My concern is that we have to go fast, but we need something first, a truce which could be assessed and checked and full-fledged negotiation.
He says go fast, I get it. He said that you can do it and engage, and Trump's a game changer because he has the firepower. And they did a bad job. They took Vladimir Putin at their word, but they never, even if they didn't take him at their word, they didn't show any strength, so Ukraine was vulnerable once again. And I don't know what more proof people have that Ukraine is one of the finest fighting forces, pound for pound, in the world. So they got, Europe has allocated $138 billion to Ukraine, compared with $119 billion from the U.S. Now, what they have done in the actual fight is take out over 800,000 Russians from the battlefield, half of which are dead. They've also had manufacturing 1.5 million drones so far on their own. They're not buying them. They're making them. Teams of people, underground controlled centers, now use software to hit thousands of targets every month in Russia. Their work explains how Russia has taken territory only slowly, and they have taken Kursk and other areas. Ukraine currently builds or finances 55% of its military hardware. The U.S. supplies 20%, Europe 25%, and that matters. And evidently, Russia has got their navy wrecked by a Ukrainian, and they opened up the Black Sea by Ukraine drones. They don't have a navy, but they took out the Russians. When we come back, Alina Haba will talk about some of the dynamics of the peace deal. Also, as Doge pushes forward, a lot of legal cases are trying to block them from being successful. I want to talk to her and tap into her legal background on that. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. If you want something fun and easy to search for homes and apartments, then you should be using the Redfin app. Whether I'm searching for my next place, if I want to buy, if I want to rent, or if I just want to scroll through and see some dream homes, like, for example, something on the beach or at least a walk to the beach, a big house, second, maybe a third floor, I use the Redfin app. Redfin makes it fun to search all the homes for sale and apartments for rent in your neighborhood. You can filter for price, for beds, for baths, square footage, and so much more. So if you find a place you love, Redfin makes it easy to go see it in person. Just schedule a tour right from the app. Plus, if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they close twice as many deals as other agents. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards your next home. So whether you're looking to buy, you're looking to rent, you're looking to sell, Redfin's got you covered. Download the Redfin app to get started.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You have a situation where it is a complete overstep for him to be asking people, what did you do in the last week? And then use that as a basis to evaluate whether someone should be retained or fired. You know, as with everybody's employment, things vary from week to week. And I think that if that went to court with an employee who was fired, if Mr. Musk and his minions didn't find what they did in the last week acceptable, there would be very little, if any, legal basis for them to be able to prevail, meaning the government.
So that is Chris Christie weighing in on people getting fired for this reason or that reason. Do they have any type of recourse? Should they be let go? And right away, most of these things with Doge end up in the courts, and most of which Trump is winning, but it's taken a lot of time and it's slowing everything down. What could be done legally? Alina Habba serves now as a counselor to President Trump directly from the White House, and Alina joins us now. Alina, what do you think about what Chris Christie said about firing people based on performance?
Maybe it's because he sat on the beach in New Jersey for so long. I don't know. He wouldn't like that evaluation too. But imagine not being able to answer a question like five things you've done in a week, and people saying that that's intrusive, illegal, ridiculous. I mean, have you ever had a real job with a boss that cares, that didn't ask what you've done or didn't ask for you to do your job? That is all we're saying. We have people that haven't showed up to work. It's a culture problem. It's a generational problem. And the president is one of the hardest working people I know, and he's not going to tolerate it.
So here's more from Christie about what he's seen over the last few days. Cut 16.
As a former governor, too, from a management perspective, you can see what a clown car this is right now. Because you've got, for instance, FBI Director Kash Patel appropriately emailing his people in response saying, don't answer it. Don't answer the questionnaire. Any review process will be done internally by the FBI. Same thing from the National Security Agency. Same thing from the acting U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia. So, you know, you have people, you know, doing this, you know, pointing in each direction. You do this, you do that. It shows that, again, this type of idea of Musk coming in there with the chainsaw that he was famously brandishing at a political event in Washington, D.C. this week. It's a lot more complicated than that. Running government's a lot more complicated than that. And hopefully they get their act together at some point.
So do you feel as though when you have Tulsi Gabbard and Kash Patel speak out about don't answer the questionnaire, does it show disarray?
No, I can tell you why there's an issue. I mean, it's pretty basic. So if you're working on things that are top secret, like myself, those items cannot and should not be disclosed to a broad spectrum. So it's really a much more basic thing. We are protecting the oath of office that we've all taken. We are protecting the confidentiality for the American people in some regard, and you have to be careful of that. I think there lies the concern. Now, are they running their departments? Yes. Are they the ultimate authority for the people they hire? Well, the president technically is, but of course they have management and oversight of those people. So I think it's a little bit more basic. I know that he would love to believe that this is a clown show. He would love to dismiss what President Trump is doing, what Doge is doing. But the idea is the correct one, and which is that we need to know you're working. We are really committed to making sure that taxpayer dollars are being used for hard work, not for DEI, not for NGOs that are hiding $20 million for some politician's pocket. And that's a first step to it. Are there going to be complications to that? Of course, but the premise of it is exactly what it should be, and I agree with it.
So, Alina, they, for example, as DOGE, which is a brand new agency within the government, mm-hmm. are they consulting with someone like you to say, hey, this is what I want to do. Will it hold up? And if not, should they?
Well, they absolutely should and do. There is a coordinated effort with counsel's office, with DOJ. Look, we all are working together. There is definitely not a right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. That's the reality of the situation. Elon has done so much for this country. It actually pains me to watch how pathetically they attack him and want to create a rift between the president and himself. But no, there is absolutely a coordinated effort. Are there going to be issues? Are we going to get legal challenges? Are there going to be people screaming? Sure. That's like any job. People, when they're asked to answer tough questions, I don't think it's really that tough of a question. I was excited to answer it. I would have asked for a couple more hours to give much more information. But, you know, it's all coordinated. As you've seen, the president has spoken about each of these decisions publicly. He speaks every day to the press, and he's made it clear that he supports this agenda. It's the American people's mandate.
So I want to talk about illegal immigration, what's happening. They're trying to, a lot of people are putting, are giving a heads up to the would-be ICE raids that are happening. Now they're putting up personal information of ICE agents and FBI agents. Listen to what Bill Malusian found out. Cut 23. 24.
Now they're doxing ICE officers and putting targets on their back. Take a look at this. Several federal sources sent this to me, telling me that activists have been putting up these posters in SoCal neighborhoods revealing the faces, names, phone numbers, and other information about ICE officers working out of the Los Angeles office. ICE tells me they are aware and investigating. DHS is calling these activists, quote, pathetic.
Is there a plan to crack down on this, or is it extremely tough?
No, yes, there is a plan. As you heard Tom Homan when there was a leak, and Kristi Noem made very clear that anybody who leaks or puts in danger anybody in blue, anybody who's doing the job that they were hired to do, going back to jobs, that's their job. They have to answer to someone who is mandating and putting in place what the president has ordered, and that is mass deportations, and that is the end of sex trafficking of minors. That is the end of the fentanyl crisis in this country, the crime in this country, and the end of sanctuary cities. If you are going to put someone who is doing his job or her job at risk and try and shame them and try and put them in danger, you will absolutely be held accountable. We do not mince our words on that. I am all for that. We protect our men in blue. We protect anybody who is doing their job for the federal government. What we don't protect are the lazy ones. We don't protect the people stealing money behind our backs. That's it. So what they've done is honestly, I mean, pathetic isn't even the word I would use. It's dangerous. It's reckless and it's illegal. You cannot do that to people. It should not happen. It's just unacceptable to me.
Just about a minute left. But if these mayors that just don't want to cooperate and want to fight you guys in these sanctuary cities like Boston, like Chicago and New York and Philadelphia, although New York is coming around, what legally can you do? How could you work to help Tom Homan break what these city councils have passed?
As the president stated to the governor of Maine, we are happy to pull funding for anybody who is not cooperating with federal mandates. And the truth is, that is the way this goes. You know, you can try and strong arm, you can try. And I'll be honest with you, what I think it is truly is that they are radical left. But more importantly, they're not looking out for their states. They're trying to get a press moment. Anything Trump gets a lot of press, you know that. And they're trying to stand on their pedestal and make a name for themselves and look like they're fighting for their people. What they're not, they're fighting for themselves. They're trying to be branded as a fighter. It's just not going to work. So we will sue them. We will pull their funding, and we will be hard-nosed on that.
Alina Haba, always great. Thanks so much.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
In less than a month, illegal crossings down 95%. ICE has arrested over 21,000 people in the nation. We had about 1,800 a day in 2023. You know how many had yesterday? 48. You're talking about 2,000 miles of border and only 48 people escaped, but that's 48 too many. I'm not going to be happy if that number is zero.
Well, that's pretty impressive, though, and I think we all know that, too. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us now. Colonel, can you give me an idea of what people are saying in Texas about what's happening?
Well, it's absolutely phenomenal. As a matter of fact, you start to see a lot of these ICE operations down in the Houston area. We know that we have, I believe, close to 400,000 illegal immigrants there. And around Houston, there's a place called Colony Ridge, which has really been a hotbed of cartel activity and criminal illegal immigration. And we know that ICE is conducting operations there. And I talked to my good friend, Sheriff Brad Coe, down in Kenney County, which is right between Eagle Pass and Del Rio. And, you know, he says that the situation has got a lot safer, and that alleviates a lot of problems that parents have for their kids, to be able to go out and just be kids. So, yes, you're seeing things happen, but we've got a big concern here when you have the Dallas interim police chief who came out last week and said he's not going to work with ICE. And that has really angered a lot of people here in Dallas and Dallas County.
Well, is he allowed to work with ICE? Is it like Chicago and technically New York and Philadelphia, Los Angeles, San Francisco, who say they're not allowed to?
Well, I think the problem that we have here is the Dallas City Council is very far left. And they just brought on a city manager who really is a puppet of that city council. And the interim police chief answers to that city manager. So I think that this is more of an ideological stance. I know that the mayor, Johnson, Eric Johnson, who just, you know, became a Republican within the last year, year and a half, he is very upset about what the interim police chief said, and I think that you'll see some actions taking place.
Right. I played before, Bill Malusian says these activists are putting up the names and addresses and phone numbers of ICE agents in Los Angeles, and they're going to look to pursue it legally, but that's a tough thing to pursue when you talk about just putting flyers on poles. I mean, that's how evil this has gotten.
Well, you know, Brian, I got to be honest. This is aiding and abetting terrorist activity, criminal illegal immigration. It's aiding and activity, felony offenses. And I think that that's how we have to look at it. And if people want to endanger the lives of our ICE agents and our law enforcement agents, there has to be consequences to that. So these individuals need to be found and they need to be charged criminally for what they are doing.
Yeah. In Los Angeles, they are tipping off that they're going on raids, but they say it's extremely tough because they're being tipped off ahead of time. So you need 30 people to go pick up maybe two guys.
Yeah, and I think that's where you have to start looking at, you know, in the military, we call it operation security, and you have to have a lockdown. Whoever's going to be involved in these type of operations, you need to lock them down. They need to be sequestered away. All their cell phones and things are taken away from them. That's how you try to reduce this ability for things to leak out. I know that Tom Homan is they're pursuing, believing that some folks within the FBI had even provided information about the failed raid up in Aurora, Colorado. But somehow we got to plug these leaks.
I would think so. Here's just tell you what you're up against in terms of police commissioner. I could not believe this, but in Chicago, that mayor is so unbelievably unpopular. I think it's 17% approval rating. That's friends and family. Boston Mayor Michelle Wu going at Tom Homan for saying that the police commissioner in Boston should turn in his badge for refusing to work with ICE. Cut 23.
I will say it's pretty clueless for someone to be insulting our police commissioner, whose decades of experience, whose leadership in the role, and whose results with our amazing police department speak for themselves.
Yeah, but will not cooperate with illegal immigrants, therefore leaving the people of Boston vulnerable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The words law enforcement means that you enforce the law. So I don't understand what part of that the mayor of Boston does not get, or any of these other individuals, especially a police chief. If you're not enforcing the law, which is set by the Constitution in this case, then what are you doing? So you are causing your citizens, your constituents, to be exposed to rapists, to murderers, to people that assault individuals, and you're going to not cooperate with those people being deported. Why? Because of some ideological shtick that you have. And this is why I really believe that, for whatever reason, this is a losing issue for the left. I don't know why they continue to hang on to it, but they're not going to win on this issue.
Right. And over in California, Mayor Bass, biggest embarrassment in the country, says this, by the way, she blames the fire department for the wildfires, right? Well, she was in Ghana. She said no one should live in fear due to their immigration status. Los Angeles is a city of immigrants, and we will continue to stand together. Really? Because your immigration status here illegally? So Bill Malusian put this tweet out. He goes, illegal aliens arrested by ICE in Los Angeles in recent days that everybody should not fear. A Guatemalan, the 18th Street Gang member convicted. A Chinese convicted child predator, a Mexican drug trafficker, a Guatemalan convicted of manslaughter, a Guatemalan convicted of rape with a gun. Bass says none of these people should be feared.
Yeah. And again, it's this word that they tried to leave out, which is illegal, or even on top of that, criminal. So what they're trying to do is lump everyone into the same basket, saying that, you know, everyone's an immigrant. No, you have people that have come into this country illegally, and I think that that's the thing that has to be stressed. And again, I think that the great messaging tool is that we need to get it out, the type of people that ICE is arresting in Los Angeles, in Boston, in New York City, all of these different places, and force these mayors to say, you really want to protect and defend murderers and rapists and child predators?
Yeah, lastly, just on the Trump agenda, this Jasmine Crockett is getting off in Texas of just going against Trump. Listen to what she said to Charlemagne. Cut 30.
The fact that I'm rooting for Canada and I'm rooting for Mexico a lot is really wild. Mm. But they are really the ones that are speaking truth to power right now. They can see what it is. And they were like, we are not messing with this crazy regime from Mar-a-Lago, and basically calling them thugs. That's what it is. But I'm like, y'all knew who he was when y'all elected him. So don't act surprised.
So they're rooting for Canada and Mexico. Is that something that people of Texas are proud of?
No, they're not. And as a matter of fact, there's a young man by the name of Sheldon Daniels, young black lawyer who is running against Jasmine Crockett. We have great hopes for him because the people in that district are embarrassed by her. And really, you know, why would you be a United States representative if you're saying that you're rooting for other countries? Same thing we see with Sheila Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. So again, you're looking at a party that is not concerned about America, American citizens, our safety and security. They're concerned only about their ideological agenda.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. She is outspoken. She is a guest heavily on the left. And lastly, Joy Reid is fired as the primetime anchor on the number one of the top three shows on MSNBC. Why do you think they're doing this?
You know, they're trying to reframe their image, I guess. You saw Jonathan Capehart and several others at MSNBC. We've seen some releases of individuals at CNN. But again, Brian, you can put the lipstick all you want on that pig. It's still a pig. And, you know, no one is watching MSNBC or CNN except for those far-left ideologues who they lost this election. And that's not the way that this country is headed. So there's nothing that the new president over there at MSNBC can do other than changing their message, changing their tone.
I guess. And then you'll put Jen Psaki in there overall and moving in, moving in a three-person panel over at 8. It's just fascinating to see what's happening in the media. And I think it's not so much left or right. It's like people are just being unreasonable.
Yeah, they're being unreasonable. They're being hard ideologues. And furthermore, they're manipulating the truth. They're not telling people the truth. They're not reporting the news. If you want to be an opinion person, be an opinion person. But don't hide the truth from the American people. And I think that's what they're seeing. And the Media Research Center under Brent Bozell, they do a fantastic job of analyzing the disparity in reporting between these mainstream or leftist news outlets and, you know, you guys at Fox.
I know. And by the way, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is the Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director, former congressman from Florida, and everybody here on KLIF, our local affiliate there, loves hearing you on. Thanks so much, Colonel.
Always a pleasure. You take care, Brian.
All right. When we come back, I'll open up the phones for the first time today, 1-866-408-7669. You saw the dynamics between Macron and Trump yesterday. Where do you think all these talks are heading? Are you comfortable as Russia comes out and says, I'd like to do a rare earth deal with the President of the United States and the United States of America? How do you feel about that? What do you think China's getting from this? Some say China's nervous that they're beginning to see a thawing with relations with Russia. Do you think they should get nervous? I don't yet. I still think that Vladimir Putin is trying to play us. I hopefully understand that we have to get the security guarantees for us and our allies, because I do not trust that guy.
In-depth analysis, insightful commentary, probing questions.
What's a furry again?
I'll tell you.
Thinks they're an animal?
Sure.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So it sounds like you're almost open to two. You're still feeling like, let me see what happens, right?
As long as we get to the same point, you know, two bills. Now, what they approved yesterday is one part of it, and then they approve another part of it. You know, you could, I guess you could make the case you could do three. You could do for 10. As long as we get along, you know, as long as we get them all added up and it's the same thing.
But right now you have Speaker Johnson who is working on one bill, says I can only get one. I don't know how many times I got to tell you, I can only get one. And he's having a hard time getting one. Here's what he said yesterday.
There may be more than one, but they'll get there. We're going to get everybody there. This is a prayer request. Just pray this through for us, because it is very high stakes, and everybody knows that. If you're a small business owner, this is a very challenging time because you don't know what to expect. The markets don't know what to expect. So putting that clarity in as early as possible is critical. And so the way to do that is with one big, beautiful bill, okay? Like, that's the president's phrase, and I've adopted it.
So that's what he's doing, because he wants to get tax reform, the no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, border funding, defense funding, everything done. And when I talk about tax reform, at the very least, renew and slight changes, and then go through a lot of the agenda that the Republicans want to do, but they got to do it once because there's so many people divided about so many different things. At least they can look at one big bill and say, I got a lot of what I wanted, if not everything. If you break it up, there's going to be people that say, no, I can't vote on it. Right now, he's got a 2-vote cushion. It's going to expand in April with 2 more. And then when they get at least a Stefanik seat done in New York, I guess in June, that'll be 3 more. But right now, not voting for it, it seems, Tim Burchett, Victoria Sparks, Tom Massey, undecided, Nicole Malliotakis. Moderate Republicans say they would vote against the bill unless leaders can ensure proposed Medicaid cuts won't diminish direct benefits to people in those districts. So a 2017 cut that they passed, Gary Cohen had a lot to do with that back then. That is in jeopardy. That'll evaporate. It'll be the biggest tax increase maybe in American history if it goes back to where it was prior to Trump getting the job. So keep an eye on that. I know people don't love legislation. It's kind of something you see on C-SPAN. But I think most of us are clued in to know what party is having success. And, of course, if you're going to raise everyone's taxes, just don't fall into the Republicans just want to cut taxes for the rich, 1% on the rich, the corporate taxes for the country to compete with other countries. It's not for Jamie Dimon and other CEOs to make more money. That's a misperception that Democrats are having a great time making the most of. So we'll see what happens, because now in the Senate, after John Thune came out and said, I passed one facet of it, they came out and said, well, I guess if Trump only wants one bill, I guess this will just be a backstop. A backstop in case all hell breaks loose and the bottom drops out. So CBO will score it, and they'll decide how much it's going to add to the deficit, and it will add. However, if you factor in the DOGE cuts, it could be a different story. And to me, it'll help the Tom Masseys and the Chip Roys of the world, and me. I want to see the budget cut, too. And what CBO is not going to take that into account for another year. But if you are a legislator and they can prove to you that these cuts are real in education, in treasury, in defense, in transportation, in EPA, you're seeing everyone come in, all the veterans committee. If you see all this stuff coming in, you can, as a legislator, say, all right, I see it. You're cutting down the expenditures. At the same time, you're also cutting taxes. That's a combination that will help growth, and hopefully we're going to meet something that'll close that gap on the $2 trillion difference. That's my hope. And that's why it's so important to do what Musk is doing. And that brings us to Doge and the controversy. Now they're being stopped for looking at education. I don't know why. They say, well, privacy. What are you talking about privacy? I mean, every day we're going on Amazon. They have they can get our credit cards and your PayPal. They have all this information, but they're doing anything to slow down Elon Musk's group. But the email that went out over the weekend is which everyone's jumping on. The email essentially said, if you're a federal worker, 2.7 million, give me the five things that you're working on. Trump loved that. And it was in response to Trump saying, I want Elon Musk to do even more. But the problem is the FBI, the DNI, other organizations were not on board with it. They didn't have any heads up. They just got the job. They can't tell everyone, if you don't tell me the five things you were doing, I'm going to fire you. So they weren't ready yet. But that didn't stop Trump from saying, good job, cut 12.
What they're doing is they're trying to find out who's working for the government. Are we paying other people that aren't working? And, you know, where is all this? Where's the money going? I think it was actually, there was a lot of genius in sending it. We're trying to find out if people are working. And so we're sending a letter to people. Please tell us what you did last week. If people don't respond, it's very possible that there is no such person or they're not working.
Yeah, that would be key. If there is no such person, that's a little bit bad. But he wants to find out if there are some invisible people out there. And I thoroughly understand it. Because if we could find out who's coming to work, that's going to thin out some people right away. Because with this, as of this week, everyone's got to come to work. Even though Joe Biden says you have 3 years. If you have special dispensation, child care, or things like that, I think some things have been built in with your supervisors, but you got to come to work. That's another way to thin the herd. I asked you if you wanted to leave with 6 months severance, and 70,000 said yes. And now we're telling you come back to work. And if you don't come back to work, you're fired. So that's another way to thin the herd. I don't think that that's too much to ask. I noticed in New York City, Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan, he told everyone to come back to work. And people are pushing back on him. And he's like, tough. You got to come back to work. So it's happening in the private sector, too. But for a while, they told us that in the future, you don't have to come to major cities. You'll be able to work out of your house and everything will be done with AI. Bottom line is we still need human interaction. We need human mentorship. We need human accountability. That's what Trump's bringing to the federal government. But, man, is there pushback. Quick note, I want to see you March 22nd, St. Louis, Missouri, at the Factory, History, Liberty, and Laughs, BrianKilmeade.com. Also, Dayton, Ohio, June 21st, the History, Liberty, and Laughs, WHIO. I want all your listeners there, the Victoria Theater, June 21st.
Top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan. We're heard around the country, around the world, where now it's, I believe, you don't have to pay the $9 to get into the city. Once you get through the city, first time in our nation's history, bad enough they're charging us from bridges and tolls, but now they want to charge us to drive in the middle, which is nuts. Trump's got rid of it, so we'll see where it goes. It did generate something like $49 million for the city so far. They want to get $15 billion or something to redo the all the subways and the transportation of the buses. I would think they got enough tax dollars from New York City, the highest tax in the country. But we'll see. This hour, we'll be joined by Joel Freeman, CEO of Freeman Institute, and one of the first chaplains in the history of the NBA, talking about what's happening. And he focuses on Jack Johnson on Black History Month, one of the great figures in sports history. And Jamie Metzl is standing by. Before we get to Jamie, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
In less than a month, illegal crossings down 95%. We had about 1,800 a day in 2023. You know how many had yesterday? 48. I'm not going to be happy if that number is zero.
Well, winning, that's what Tom Homan and Donald Trump are doing at the border while cracking down in our country. Their greatest obstacles are actually coming from the inside. I'll explain.
Number two.
What they're doing is they're trying to find out who's working for the government. Are we paying other people that aren't working? And, you know, where is all this? Where's the money going? I think it was actually... There was a lot of genius in sending it. We're trying to find out if people are working.
Yep, just an email. That's all. Doge, front and center. Cost-cutting continues while Trump's plan to let Musk lead looks smarter by the day.
Number one.
The Ukrainians, the Russians, the American interests, that's a complex system, and the best things are done quietly. I'm less concerned about what people say out loud, and more importantly, that they're working towards achieving that objective, which is deeply in America's interest.
Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Ukraine-Russia war, critical week for sustainable peace. As U.S. takes a huge risk at the U.N. and Macron comes to town to warn Trump on Vladimir Putin, he cannot be trusted. He's broken his word in the past with him specifically. In fact, Macron came out and said, I was the last one to meet with him before the invasion in 2022. We talked for 7 hours. And everything he told me, he did the opposite. Jamie Metzl's here, former member of the WHO Advisory Committee, former National Security Council official in the Clinton administration, and author of the book Super Convergence, How the Genetics, Biotech, and AI Revolution Will Transform Our Lives, Work, and World. Longtime Democrat, Jamie Metzl, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Brian. Really happy to be here. You didn't mention, and a longtime friend of this show.
Absolutely. I should bring that up. Ukraine-Russia war, where do you think we're at right now?
I'm really worried. I mean, certainly you have been a very strong and vocal supporter of the Ukrainians. I have been so as well. What they have done is heroic. We all recognize that after 3 years, this war is at a stalemate, and the president of the United States should play an important role in bringing it to an end. So I don't have any problem with the United States playing that role. It could be that President Trump has some kind of secret plan, and there are things that are happening underneath that I don't see. But from what I've seen so far, I'm concerned. Yesterday, the United States voted alongside Russia and North Korea against a pretty basic statement condemning Russia for invading Ukraine, calling Zelensky a dictator, appearing so far to be much tougher on our allies and partners and friends than our adversaries. If it turns out that this critique is all wrong and this is some kind of rope-a-dope strategy, nobody will be happier than me. But right now I'm concerned because the architecture of Europe and NATO, which we set up not because of altruism, but for a hard sense of our own interests in the aftermath of World War II, is dependent on everybody believing that the word of the United States counts for a whole lot. That's why we don't have 10 million soldiers in Europe. And if people don't know where the United States stands, whether with our allies in Europe or our adversaries in Russia, I think that's going to be a real problem. And if Putin has something that looks like a win to him, this will not be the end. Because for Putin, this is not about territory. This is about sovereignty, and it's about the future of Europe. So I hope there's a strategy. I hope that we're not seeing everything, but I am concerned.
So here we are. I'm going to meet with Marco Rubio today. We'll bring back the interview tomorrow and Thursday and Friday. But there's a couple of things going on. I don't love the UN proclamation. Who would ever think we'd ever side with North Korea, Iran? You got to be kidding. But if
and just on that, even Iran abstained. I mean, it's so heinous.
So then they rewrote it. Then
he
rewrote it and passed something. So what they said is, what Trump looks at it as is this. He said, "I need the bad guys and the good guys at the table. And if I start saying these are the bad guys, I am not going to get them at the table. What's my objective?" So he'll take all the slings and arrows early for the ultimate objective. And here's what's the best possible scenario. I don't think they're leaving that 20%. Just like the only card they have to play is Kursk. They took that area. They're not letting it go of Russia. So they're holding on to that 20%. I think you don't have to. You could do what they did in Korea, because they never said, I gave up on North Korea. They said, here's the 38th parallel. That's where we'll break it up for now. So let's say they keep that 20% and they get a peacekeeping unit of France, UK, pick out Sweden, Finland, whatever it is, in there, with a promise that if they're ever attacked, America will come over the top. But we're not going to be on the ground.
Right.
Works. And then they need $550 billion to rebuild Ukraine. So you would now have an agreement, a ceasefire and agreement, and a tripwire should they change their ways.
Yeah, so I'm not against that. As I said, if we get there, and if there are very legitimate security guarantees, Ukraine had a chance. And we didn't give them all the weapons that we should have that might have increased the chance, but they had a chance to take back this territory. Right now, the pressure is coming the other way. It's the Russians who are advancing and the Ukrainians.
Slightly,
who,
right?
Slightly, but the Ukrainians who are putting up an absolutely heroic defense are weakening little by little. And so what you've just described, it's conceivable. And especially
if we get there,
if we had real security guarantees for Europe, if we doubled down and we made absolutely clear to Putin, if you take another step anywhere, not just in Ukraine, but in the Baltics and all these other places where you're trying to sow division, we are 100% with and behind our NATO allies. I can see it. And that's why I said, like, there are some ingredients there that could work. And look, having Donald Trump here, who nobody knows what he's going to do, there can be downsides of that, but there can be real upsides. And everybody is guessing. But what Putin is trying to do is not just seize a little bit of Ukraine. What Putin is trying to do is to destabilize this whole post-war international system and NATO and the European Union, and we can't let it go to that. But I'm willing to give President Trump and his team the benefit of the doubt, but we need to articulate, well, what are the principles that we're fighting for, and then evaluate what progress is made against those principles.
So a couple of things. Do you like the rare earth deals that could potentially be signed this week with Ukraine and the U.S.?
So I haven't seen the specifics. So in principle, it's a good idea if America isn't going to have boots on the ground, to have people on the ground, to have interests on the ground. So conceivably, this could be a win-win. The way it was initially articulated as it's going to be a payback for U.S. assistance to Ukraine, that didn't make sense to me because, frankly, Ukraine has been fighting a fight on behalf of all of us, on behalf of the free world standing up to this kind of aggression. But it's a good idea to tie Ukraine and the United States and Europe all together, and somebody needs to pay for a whole lot of things, mm-hmm. including for the reconstruction of Europe. So I'm not against that in principle, but I want to see the specifics.
Right. So here is what Emmanuel Macron said yesterday on the how he sees Donald Trump's role. Cut 7.
Everybody has in mind all the losses and casualties and what the Ukrainian people lived during the past 3 years. And they've been very brave, and they just protected their territory and their sovereignty. And I think the arrival of President Trump is a game changer. And I think he has the deterrence capacity of the U.S. to re-engage with Russia. So I think it's feasible. My concern is that we have to go fast, but we need something first, a truce which could be assessed and checked and full-fledged negotiation.
So truce, but he also went on to say, I was the one who, we signed off on the ceasefire in 2014. What'd they do? Take more. And they still had the invasion in 2022. And he sat him down for 7 hours. But he also sees that something, Vladimir Putin's got something with Trump and vice versa. And he came out yesterday and said, I want to offer the Americans a deal for our rare earth. And it's an interesting, and I know this is also plague, because we certainly have substantial rare earth and we have substantially more resources of this kind than Ukraine. He says, I would invite the American companies to develop aluminum reserves in Siberia, an issue that estimated to be worth $15 billion. So he's saying, I want investment. Obviously, I think, what I read in between the lines, they've been hollowed out. 500,000 to 700,000 casualties, half of which are dead, have to bring in North Korea, recruit Yemeni fighters to go fight. A million people have left from the brain drain. And then you have basically pulled off the SWIFT financial system. And we've had all the West has pulled out from McDonald's on down of their country. So it's a miserable, especially miserable place to be.
Yeah, so I am very, very cautious of that offer. What I believe Putin is doing is dangling a carrot in front of us. And the perfect place that the Russians would like to be is right in the middle of us and China. So you look at Siberia, it has unlimited natural resources. And right now, Putin is in Xi Jinping's pocket. He doesn't want to be that. But if he puts us in Siberia and China has its eyes on Siberia, which has Lake Baikal, the largest freshwater resource in the world, and China has no freshwater, he's basically pitting us against China with Russia in the middle. So we really need to be strategic. I mean, we have rare earths here, minerals here in the United States.
But?
Yeah, but we have a hard time getting at them.
Because of environmentalists.
100%. So before we do what I consider to be surrendering to Putin in a way that delivers a message to Europe, it delivers a message to Taiwan, we should say, hey, look at we need these rare earth minerals to make our technology work. We have to get them some way. One is by going on bended knee to China. One is by going on bended knee to Russia. A better way is to figure out a way to mine them in our own beautiful, blessed country.
But what about your Democratic friends, Jamie, in Minnesota, for example, that passed a law just to make sure we didn't do strip mining?
Yeah. So, you know, I am a Democrat, but that doesn't mean I stand by everything that any Democrat does. I mean, we have to weigh everything in the context of our national interest. That's why I'm here. That's why you and I are friends. Yeah. Is that it, just because our party does something. So I think the Democrats, yes, you know, does everybody want to live in a clean environment? Does everybody want to, you know, not dig big holes in the earth? But sometimes you got to do it to balance the interests.
And I always bring this up in New York. We got more natural gas in upstate New York, which is really, really economically strapped. Pennsylvania says, no, we'll do it. And they have benefited from it. In New York, they won't. Even though they did an environmental impact study, Cuomo commissioned it, saw that it wasn't going to have much of an impact, and didn't do it. So how are you helping?
Yeah.
We're going to take a time out because I know you have other things. You're upset about some of the executive orders President Trump has done.
Yes.
More on Jamie Metzl in just a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I really want to emphasize to people that this is a very important point. If we don't solve the deficit, there won't be money for medical care. There won't be money for Social Security. We either solve the deficit or all we'll be doing is paying debt. It's got to be solved or there's no medical care. There's no Social Security. There's no nothing. It's got to be solved. It's not optional. America will go bankrupt if this is not done. That's why I'm here.
That is Elon Musk talking about why is it Doge that we don't have a choice. We're running $2 trillion deficits overall, adding to $36 trillion in debt. Jamie Metzl's here. Jamie, you're concerned about Doge. You're concerned about Elon Musk. Why?
Yeah. So I'm concerned about Doge because it's just outside of our system. I mean, the Congress hasn't played any role in empowering Doge. It's just essentially these private citizens. Nobody knows who they are, what they're doing. And these cuts seem indiscriminate. Absolutely, Elon Musk is right, that our government is just ballooning in size. And that's what Edward Gibbon wrote about the Roman Empire. It's like you're young and hungry, and then you become fat and bloated, and then you start falling apart. Mm-hmm. So we need to make cuts. He mentioned health care. We are about 19% of our GDP of the wealthiest country in history is going to health care. And if we were getting better results, like we were living healthier, longer lives than our counterparts in other developed countries, I'd say, well, that's a good return on our investment. But we're not even getting those things. So I think that we need to look at the way our government is functioning. But the way that it's happened here, it just seems willy-nilly. I mean, they had an analysis of all the announced savings, and there were just so many mistakes and errors. I just was reading this morning that 40% of the cuts that have already been made won't have any impact on the deficit. But if we want to have a serious plan to limit our deficit, let's do it in a structured way, not a bunch of young kids tapping into our systems, but a real systematic, structured way. And I get that it's hard because bureaucracies defend themselves. Like that's the nature of bureaucracies. But this definitely feels indiscriminate. And even with the first step of the cuts being USAID, I'll just give a quick story. I have a friend who I met relatively recently who's from Zimbabwe, and he's from a tribe called the San people. I don't know if when you were younger you saw the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy.
No.
So it's about these nomadic hunter-gatherers in the Kalahari, and they speak with clicks. I mean, these guys are really And so this guy, I met him a few months ago, and I was just giving a talk, and he came up to me, and he goes, this is so interesting and it's so important. And I gave him a copy of my book that you just mentioned. He read the book in 3 days, and then he read it again, and then he told me he was going back to his village to give a training on the future of agriculture because they had been nomadic hunter-gatherers, and now because of poaching laws, they couldn't do it, and they were trying to figure out how to farm and how to think about technology. And this guy, a few weeks ago, just sent me an email saying, I'm just heartbroken. Our village was being decimated by HIV/AIDS, and the American government came and gave us these life-saving treatments, which cost us nothing. And it basically saved our village. And now these treatments are being pulled away, and we don't know what.
Yeah, I think some of those are being reinstituted. But you don't like the couple of things.
Yeah.
Simpson Bowles was done through the governmental way.
Yes.
Hey, let's pick up 2 people, a year and a half. And guess what happened with Simpson Bowles?
Nothing.
And guess what it would have done? A lot.
Yeah.
And Paul Ryan, a lot of established people around, they poured their heart and soul into it.
Yep.
It was legitimate. Barack Obama looked at it and said, this will never pass, never even put it up.
Yep.
So that's when a year and a half study yielded nothing.
Yes.
So I think that indiscriminate, let's see, it does seem quick. I know that.
Yep.
But maybe this might be the only way to do it quick before private interests get involved. And I think it would show balance if you found a pro-life program in there that was pushing an agenda in that. Pull that too. But right now it looks like it's only left-wing causes, which makes it seem partisan.
Well, I think the test is, I mean, we're doing these massive tax cuts. At the end of this administration, will the debt and the deficit be bigger or smaller? And that's going to be a test. And everything I'm seeing has suggested the deficit and the debt is on track to being bigger, not smaller.
Right. But the DOGE is not done. My hope is it's going to work. Thanks, Jamie.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
As you know, the Americans are going to be celebrating something very important coming up, our 250th anniversary, our nation's founding. And when we do, we're going to look forward to honoring the contributions of countless Black Americans who fought to win and protect and expand American freedom from the very, very beginning.
And that is the President of the United States celebrating Black History Month with a huge event last week. And I tell you, you listen to Mike Tyson, you talk to other athletes. I talked to Jim Brown, who I was very friendly with before he passed away a couple of years ago. His daughter was actually in the audience. So many people, and he got so much more of the black vote. Still way too low, 15 to 17%, but it used to be 8%. And then when African-Americans, people should know that the DEI, he's not coming down on minorities when he talks about cracking down on DEI. He just wants to get back to meritocracy because he sees no difference. If he sees prejudice, he'll be just as outraged as anyone else. That's my opinion about the guy I've gotten to know who happens to be president of the United States. But one of the things I do have a passion for, huge passion for, is boxing, especially history. And I've done a lot of looking at Jack Johnson, did a lot of reading and looking at some of his videos. And just to think about what he was in the segregated South, he emerged as a heavyweight champion. No one wanted to fight him because, including Jim Jeffries, because they knew they would lose. And they didn't want a black heavyweight champion. When he finally got his shot, he won it and held on to it for a long time until they found a way to manipulate it away. Joel Freeman joins us now, CEO of the Freeman Institute. He was one of the first chaplains in the history of the NBA. That's a side note. But he has a recording of the 1910 by the world heavyweight champion Jack Johnson just 20 days after he won the fight of the century. And he focuses on that now on Black History Month. Joel, welcome.
Thank you, Brian. It's great to be here.
What's special about Jack Johnson? Why should we know him on Black History Month?
Well,
and
a
every
lot
day.
Of people... Yes. A lot of people think of, jocks. You've been around a lot of sports folks, and I have also. And a lot of people think, they're just physical out there doing their thing, but don't have a high intellect. Well, I'll tell you what, the more I researched about him, I mean, he was raised in the east end of Galveston, 12th Ward. He didn't go past the fifth grade. And yet, beyond boxing, he was someone who was an avid reader. He loved Victor Hugo and Alexander Dumas. He could quote script Shakespeare, and he was a spy in Spain. He was in the center of the Russian Revolution, the Mexican Revolution in Mexico, Cuba, a bunch of other revolutions. He seemed to find himself in the middle of all kinds of controversial situations, But he was a spy. Colonel Lang from the U.S. Army had commissioned him to go on the coast of Spain to look for submarines, German submarines. And he it was very, very dicey, the weather, the storms and everything else. And he brought back some actionable information. He was fluent in French and Spanish, a horse trainer, an actor. He loved racing. There's epic, the story of police officer stops him, says that, well, that'll be $50 for going over the speed limit. And he says, well, here's $100 because I'm coming right back. And he was a musician, played the bass violin, an author. He wrote a book, an autobiography, and there's no record of any ghostwriter or anything else. And it's a magnificent book. Some people say that he stretches a little bit because that's the way he was. But he is also an international traveler in an age with no airplanes. It's amazing how far he got all across the United States and into Canada, all around Europe, Russia. He was around Tsar Nicholas and Rasputin and all kinds of things. And also he represented himself in a lawsuit. He was trying to make it over to do a fight in Cuba or in Mexico and then end up in Cuba. And he was in Barbados for about 3 weeks, did some sightseeing and trying to get a boat to get over there. But a lot of boat owners were scared because they were afraid of submarines, German submarines in that region. And finally, a boat guy made a frivolous lawsuit, brought him to court, and he couldn't find a lawyer to represent himself in a way that he thought it needed to be represented. He did his own representation, won the lawsuit, and he uses the term that the judge was stunned by his ability, his understanding of English law. He's also an inventor with a registered patent in his own name. I'll shut up. I could go on.
Yeah. I mean, so let's talk about how he made his name. Number one, he was extremely outspoken. He was Muhammad Ali before there was Muhammad Ali. Afterwards, Joe Lewis would become champion. They say, don't be like Jack Johnson. Because he was very provocative and was not going to be tolerant, and he would date white women. Can you imagine that back then and Green across state lines, the whole Mann Act and all these things? But the thing is, he was the best boxer in the world, but he couldn't get a heavyweight championship fight until he fought Tommy Burns in Sydney, Australia in 1908. And he crushed him, right?
Yes. In fact, that fight, the policeman shut the cameras off just before he hit the deck at the last end, because they didn't want to show that. Yeah, Jack was he was a remarkable boxer throughout his early years. He learned. He was in jail with Jim Chowansky, and he learned the art along the way. And then once he hit 1908, as you said, in Sydney, Australia, and beat Tommy Burns, he had chased him all over Europe and said, fight me, fight me. He's in the front row yelling at him, and he and his entourage. And so finally got that fight. But John L. Sullivan said, I refuse to fight a black man. This is whole based on racial lines. James Jeffries, he retired, fought all the white fighters, and refused to fight Jack. There's a story that they were at a bar one time, and he said, and that Jim laid $2,500 on the table and said, let's go to the basement and fight, and whoever wins, whoever makes it up the stairs, can get this $2,500. And he said, no, I'm not a basement fighter. That's what Jack said. And so Jack was very patient, and the way he approached it. And one of the things, Brian, that about 3 years, if you have a Black History collection of genuine documents and artifacts, the oldest piece dates back to 1553.
But if I could date you back to that, let's go back to Jack Johnson, because Jim Jeffries retires as undefeated heavyweight champion. He gets really heavy and gets out of shape. But they say, you got to come back because you're the great white hope. You got to beat Jack Johnson to restore the honor of the white people. And they have the fight of the century. And listen to how it sounded.
Here in round 15, he rushes Jeff against the ropes and lands a hard right uppercut. He follows it up with three left hooks, and Jeffries goes down for the first time in his entire professional career. Jeff rises and gets hit with a smashing left hook, which sends him out of the ring. Jeff's chief second, with the help of a fan, lifts him to his feet. Johnson rushes Jeffries across the ring, where he floors Jeff with a paralyzing right to the head. Rickard steps between the two fighters as Sam Berger rushes in and stops the fight to save Jeffries from further punishment. This startling conclusion puts an end to the most dramatic heavyweight championship fight in the last 75 years. James J. Jeffries suffers the first and only defeat of his entire professional career, while Jack Johnson successfully defends his world heavyweight championship.
So that was significant because now all of a sudden black people getting beat up across the country because a black man beat a white man for the heavyweight championship.
Yep. 20 people died after that. There were race riots in 50 different cities around the country. Very sad. And in fact, there was a threat that someone was going to be in there to shoot him if he won. And they were saying, all the newspapers were saying that the fix was in, that Jack was a yellow-bellied coward, and he's going to cave to Jeffries. And that's why when they were pushing him back at the very end, because, you know, in the disc that I own of Jack Johnson speaking about the 15th round, he talks about how people came from James Jeffries' corner when he knocked him down the first time. That was the first time in James Jeffries' career he'd been knocked down. And they helped him up, which is illegal. And so when that happened, Jack knew that based on all this, the controversy around this, that he had to really end this. This couldn't be a decision. It had to be a knockdown, and had to be dramatic. And that's why he went all the way to knock him down again.
Now, when he did lose the title in Cuba, the word is, even though it won 20-something rounds, that the fight was fixed. What do you think?
You know, I can see both sides. Jack says that he was made a promise that if he caved, that he would be given preferential treatment because he was a fugitive. I tend to believe that he heard that he would be given special consideration because he really wanted to get back to his mother. And that's what was driving him to come back. And of course, she passed away while he was a fugitive. But I lean in that direction, but we'll never know for sure.
It was against Jess Willard, this behemoth of a man who didn't have a great boxing skill, but real strong guy, obviously endurance. Because I said one of the things is Jack Johnson got knocked down and he put his hand over his head to cover his eyes from the sun. They say you don't do that if you're knocked out.
Yeah, yeah. But, yep, there are several different clues that seem for me to lean in that direction.
Do you think he was killed?
No, I think that this, as the story goes, that he was in North Carolina, just outside of Raleigh, and that he was denied service. And I just think it just blinded him with such rage that he hit a telephone pole because they took him to the hospital. And I think he was still on some, you know, so-called life support. He was still alive for a couple of days afterwards. But, you know, there were people tried to poison him. One time someone, I can't remember what city he was in. I think it was Denver. It was prior to the in Reno, prior to the fight of the century, that his food taster actually switched a drink. And he drank it, and it affected him terribly. And, of course, Jack would have been out of commission if he drank it.
So interesting. So Joe Freeman, our guest, we're just looking over fantastic African-Americans that stand out in the Black History Month. What should we take away from Jack Johnson's life?
Well, I think it's the whole idea of having everything against you. I just look at it this way because you know, the whole idea of concrete, you know, grass, a blade of grass coming through a concrete, some concrete. The thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. And when we look at Jack as being a blade of grass coming through concrete, he had so much against him internally and externally. And yet he was one that, I mean, he at one point in his life, he was a bigger draw. People knew more about him than Dubois, Booker T. Washington. Uh-huh. He had more influence, and so there. But people, because of his personal life, they loved his accomplishments. But he was kind of a complicated man. How do we deal with him? That's why Joe Louis didn't want to be around him.
Right. Another thing is, it's good to see a black man. We were told that you're second class or you couldn't mount up, and you have another man who became heavyweight champion, by far the most prestigious title in the world for an athlete, and then didn't mind boasting about it and telling
That's
people.
Right.
And it probably must have given a whole generation a sense of confidence, as well as how well he spoke and how smart he was.
And his trash talking, you know, it's always marvelous when someone trash talks and then backs it up.
Yeah.
And that's Jack did that at every turn.
For more information on Joel and recreating Jack Johnson interview using AI, go to jacksvoice.card.co. That's C-A-R.
I think jackjohnsonspeaks.com is best. jackjohnsonspeaks.com.
Okay.
That's the best one.
All right. Good job, Joel. Thanks for doing this, Brian. I appreciate it. Thanks for being with us. Hey, quick announcement. When we come back, I'm going to find out if there's going to be more to know. That'll be interesting, too. Just a quick announcement, too. Don't forget, coming up on March 22nd with Fox Nation, History, Liberty, and Laughs. I believe it's going to be streaming. I'll be at the Factory in St. Louis. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. And then go to, in June 21st, coming up quicker than you think. We'll be able to wear short sleeves back then, no coats, Victoria Theater. June 21st, go to BrianKilmeade.com for that, too. Inspirational, motivational, and patriotic. Back with more to know in just a moment. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Radio that makes you think. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Just completing this hour. Just a quick note. I hope everybody checks it out, because I'm going to be, it's coming up March 22nd. I'm going to be in St. Louis at the Factory, and I'm going to be on History, Liberty, and Laughs. My chance to talk about great moments in our history through my 7 history books, my 2 sports books. So it would be inspirational, motivational, and insightful. The war on history, which we're still in the middle of, I'm pushing back on it. Hopefully you are too. And then the greatest comeback ever with Donald Trump and even his enemies. Greatest political comeback in history. You see, ABC and NBC had to admit the same thing. And then I talk about our great past, which brings us to where we're at today on year 250. So hopefully you'll see me in St. Louis and Dayton in June. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for tickets. And if you want to get VIP, and I hope you do, that's my chance to talk to you about an hour before the show, get all your questions out, inside stories on Fox and things to that nature. And we take pictures and sign books and do things like that. So let's find out if you need to know more.
More to know.
So Joy Reid is out. The very controversial host at MSNBC is gone, and she is, I'm not sure if she took it very badly, crying on camera, but the new hosts are the people from The Weeknd, Simone Sanders, Townsend, Michael Steele, and Alicia Menendez. Congratulations to them, and Jen Psaki will reportedly be anchoring a primetime hour. More NBC news. Lester Holt is stepping down as anchor and managing editor of the NBC Nightly News. He's been doing it since 2015. He used to fill in the mornings, got it at night. And then, of course, when Brian Williams forgot to tell the truth for a while, he took over and held on to it. He's still going to do Dateline. And that's all the NBC News I have. Next, Donald Trump is looking to sell off Nancy Pelosi's federal building in San Francisco. I love it. Trump is looking to get rid of it. It is basically empty, and it was dubbed the Nancy Pelosi Federal Building. So get rid of it, right? She has been nothing but a pain in his side. Remember, she tore up his State of the Union address. That is war, baby. Now it's one of the 2 cornerstones federal government properties in San Francisco. Mid-market Civic Center neighborhoods. They could be on the chopping block, he says. Billionaire Elon Musk is looking into it, too. An internal U.S. General Administrative Services document viewed by the Chronicle has identified 2 federal properties in San Francisco as non-core and a non-core asset earmarked for potential sale. So I hope it's sold. At the very least, take the name off. Next, trans athlete. Yup, missing a California girls basketball playoff game amid the Trump administration's crackdown because they don't believe trans athletes, men or boys, should be playing in women's sports. Do you? Well, this San Francisco Waldorf girls basketball team to a 9-8 record and a playoff meeting against Cornerstone Christian School. But the trans athlete's absence led to San Francisco losing 56-30. No reason was given for the athlete's absence. Multiple protesters attended the Saturday night game on the Cornerstone's campus. Next. Costco chairman reveals surprising luxury items that fly off the shelves. Affluent people love a good deal. People of all socioeconomic statuses appear to know Costco is the place to turn for deals. Whether it's a $1.50 hot dog combo or a luxury car, that according to retailer chairman Hamilton Tony James. Recently in a Q&A with Chief Executive Magazine, the Costco CEO has always kept an eye on the competition while focusing on growth from the small markets. He said this: "We've always known we could move anything in volume if the quality was good and the price was great. Rolex watches, Dom Perignon, 10-carat diamonds, a Porsche dealer in Seattle put their cars on the floor of Costco, and they sold out in a week." It's true because, you know, most people who are rich grew up paycheck to paycheck. It's unbelievable. I think the number's like 75%. They're first-generation success stories, so they know what it's like to pinch pennies.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Good morning. Welcome to the latest minutes of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. A lot going on in New York. Congestion pricing. They just came in. The congestion pricing, which is unprecedented in our country. Can you imagine charging people to go through the heart of a city $9? They made something like $49 million on it already in a month. And they say that's below what they thought. They said they need something like $15 billion to revitalize the MTA, as if the tunnels and bridges don't bring you enough, along with the fines and everything else that they charge you for here. But that's just a national issue that President Trump said, I'm getting rid of it. But speaking of President Trump, there's no doubt about it. This second term, he went from the least experienced president to the most experienced president as he gets 4 years off and comes back. I think the press took a breather, too, and realized maybe they were overzealous. I'm being kind in the way they treated him along the way. And also, it's also noteworthy the amount of people that have joined and to be a part of it, whether it's Tim Cook and Apple with $500 billion in an investment here, whether it's Elon Musk saying I'll volunteer to cut government spending there, or whether it's David Sachs saying I'd love to be your AI and crypto czar. Who are these people? These are Silicon Valley men and women who have spent most of their time not liking Republican causes. David Sachs tended to be more conservative. I'll give you that. But you have other people in the fray that just want to be part of it. Mark Zuckerberg, not only did he transform his hair, but he is all in, too, especially with the investment in our country. They realize it's almost their patriotic duty to help out. They're so rich. What else can they do? And maybe I'll go back and look at these comments and say, Brian, how naive you were in 2025. I just don't think so. One guy that's been there all along is Kid Rock. He was on One Nation Sunday. I want to bring back some of that interview. He's known Trump forever, and he's seen the change in Trump. And he also has a lot of people that just don't support him, especially in rock and roll and music and in the arts that he hangs out with. Well, how do you handle that when your guy wins or your woman loses, whatever it is? I asked Kid Rock that, but we open up with what George Clooney said. And George Clooney says, hey, I'm going to roll with it. Whether I voted for him or not, I'm going to vote for him. And then you got Whoopi Goldberg, just the opposite. Here's my interview with Kid Rock from One Nation Sundays at 10.
This is democracy, and this is how it works. And, you know, what the hell
are you supposed to do? How'd it go this time for you? I forgot who you were supporting.
Well, I don't know. What am I supposed to do? You know, storm the f***ing Capitol? You know, it's like, it didn't work out. That's what happened.
There you go. Next time.
It's part of democracy, and we'll get, you know, and there's the people who agree and people who disagree, and most of us still like each other. We're all going to get through it.
Nice. Unlike Whoopi Goldberg, who clearly does not get that concept.
It's hard to talk to people who support people who think you don't matter in the country.
But it's not supporting the person,
but,
though.
No, but it when you support that person...
Wow. In that industry that encouraged you to not take a stand, rock artist, superstar, Kid Rock took one, longtime friend, President Trump. And he joins me right now. All right. Great to see you. So, Bob, are you more like Clooney, compete and then shake and hug it out? Or are you more like Whoopi? I can't deal with that person.
Well, I definitely don't have too much Hollywood in me at all.
Right.
I would like to say 0%. As a matter of fact, I've been proud for years to be called Hollywood's kryptonite. But in full disclosure, you know, me and George have mutual friends, and I've known him throughout the years. And he's always been a pretty sensible, fun guy, fun to be around, you know, pretty smart. Seems like he's got common sense. Of course, we disagree on political things, but I would definitely have to put myself a little bit more like George. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what Whoopi's angry about. It seems like everything. bless her heart. But yeah, you know, I would say, you know, hey, at least George, you know, had the conads to kind of speak up after what most of us saw for 4 years, clearly, of Joe Biden's cognitive health, that something's wrong here. You know, who the hell is steering the ship? And then at least he had, you know, the fortitude to call him out and say, like, look, something's not right here. God bless him. I don't wish anything bad. You know, we're all going to have to face things like this, or know people who are facing it are going to face it. And, you know, it was completely wacky to me. Like, oh, everything's fine. Like, who's steering the frickin' ship?
Exactly. It's not, for example, you might think Jimmy Carter's policies are bad, but you don't think there's anything wrong with Jimmy Carter. You thought there's something physically wrong with Joe Biden. But you also say with President Trump, you see a change. You've known him for a while, but you see something different about him this time. What is it?
Oh, man. I mean, I think a lot of it's, I mean, I don't really think he had any problems with confidence ever, but there's something about a level of confidence. And I think that comes with knowing that what you did the first 4 years was the right thing, to put this country first. And then to have 4 years to kind of sit back and see exactly what not to do, and then come in knowing, you know, it's experience. It's just experience that he had. I'm sure, you know, people take his life a couple times, you know, definitely, you know, brings out a certain, you know, thing in any of us who have witnessed death or been close to it. So I think it's just, you know, and also knowing really, you know, who the right people are at this point,
yeah,
the people you can trust to implement the America First agenda.
Yeah, I know. And you know, I've never seen him smile so much, even dating back to when he was promoting fights. He just seems happy. I know you're used to this, but not many other people are. You went to an arena and people are cheering. There's something about when I watch you go into an arena, a UFC event with Trump and with whoever's with him that day, that seemed to me to be as exciting as it gets. As we roll it, could you tell me what it's like walking in to a UFC fight with President Trump?
Oh, man, it's, you know, number one, I'm not used to playing second fiddle in that in that area too much. But if I was ever going to do it, and I would be proud to do it any time that, you know, Dana White calls me to be part of it. And really, Dana White kind of gets a lot of credit for putting that together, for being friends with Trump and saying, you know, no, we're going to walk into Kid Rock's American Badass plane. You know, I just kind of get to, you know, tag along like a kid in the grocery store with his mom, you know, and you know, I just look up to him for having the balls to stand up for this country the way he has and just fight for our country and unapologetically just be 1,000% red, white, and blue. I can relate to that. I can relate to ruffling some people's feathers and trying to speak your truth and being honest and open. And I don't think we're ever going to see anything like this, at least in my lifetime. I can't foresee it. I've been fortunate enough to be around pretty much every living president and spend some time with him since Carter. And this is just... Oh,
it's different. Like, I know.
I'm giddy, like a little girl. I'm giddy.
I know. And the thing is, people chant USA, USA. So, you know, you're on the right team. So I'm excited for your tour. The 21st is going to be in Omaha, Nebraska. We have great affiliates out there, great Fox fans. You, Nickelback, will headline with Rock the Country on the 9-city tour. Tickets available at kidrock.com. You're also doing something cool. May 16th at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, you're teaming up with the PBR Team Rodeo format. How's that going to work?
It's great. Rather than you know, like people racing against the clock for most of the events, they're actually going head-to-head, whether it's steer ropers or, you know, girls barrel racing, so you get more drama in there. And this is a sport where people, you know, cowboys really don't like people messing with their sports. So, you know, we did our first one last year, and everyone was ecstatic, from all the world champions that were part of it to the riders and the fans. So we're really looking forward to the second one this year.
Kid Rock, thanks so much. We look forward to seeing you out on the road, and we'll make sure to tape everything you do. And hopefully we'll get you on the Fox and Friends concert series this summer, because I'd like to see you actually playing that, playing your music, singing your songs in the morning. Let's see if you're as good in the morning as you are at night.
Are you sure you guys can afford me?
Yeah, probably not. We'll see what we can do with the budget. You know, we'll take half a Ducey salary. We'll see if we can afford you. Kid Rock, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Kid Rock. I told him I have a new time slot. He came back and told me, he goes, hey, I'm going to help you out. Great. It's a huge help and got huge ratings. So coming up next, a guy that wants to make you live longer through human. He's the most, I guess, tested person in history. His name is Brian Johnson. He's got the famous Don't Die movement. His story coming your way on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
As a species, we accept our inevitable decay, decline, and death. I want to argue that the opposite should be true.
My name is Brian Johnson. I've been spending millions of dollars creating an anti-aging protocol.
I take 54 pills, red light therapy, plasma exchanges,
and I'm going to be injected with my first gene therapy.
Thanks, Doc. I'm trying to be on the outermost edge of possibility for the science. We may walk into a future where all of us live healthier and longer. I want to live with everything that I am.
And that is the words of Brian Johnson, who is living the life that everyone wants to live if they want to live a long time. His experiments are supposed to benefit mankind, and perhaps they are already. The spirit and the theme is don't die, because he doesn't want to, and he's doing something about it. He's a self-made, very successful multimillionaire, and he decided to make his body and his life a human experiment on longevity, and he joins us now. Brian, welcome back.
Hey, good to see you again.
Hey, good to see you. First off, how do you feel?
You know what? I wake up every day. I feel great. I think before in other versions of my life, I would feel ornery and groggy and tired and lethargic. And I feel energetic and enthusiastic, and my mood is great.
Tell everyone who is not familiar with your journey what you decided to do.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in 1870, if you were to whisper into their ears, you would say, hey, there are these new ideas that microscopic objects called bacteria cause infection and lead to death. Now, if you live in 1870, you say, that's crazy. I don't believe it. Turns out the theory was true. And so right now I'm saying if the future could whisper into our ears, they would say, don't die. That we've reached this point of technological ability that we may be able to begin extending our lifespans to degrees we can't imagine.
So you're the most tested, most measured person in history. What do you go through on a daily basis?
It's about 4 hours every morning. I go through a routine. And what we did is we built an algorithm, an AI system that could take better care of me than I can myself. And so we take all the data from my body. We put it to this algorithm. We say, what do we do on this? Like, what do I eat? How do I exercise? What's my sleep protocol? So we let my body's organs operate my daily protocol. And so instead of going to the store and saying, what do I feel like eating? Or looking at the menu and like, you know, I kind of feel like this today. We make it based upon data. So I wake up every morning. I do about, so let me give you specifics. So I get out of bed. I'll take my inner ear temperature to see my body temperature. I'll get on a scale. We get my weight, hydration, body fat, muscle, etc. I'll look into 10,000 lux light to get my mood set and my circadian rhythm. I'll then do a few therapies, like a breath work or meditation. I'll exercise for an hour, take 50 pills, eat breakfast, which is a few pounds of vegetables, and then a few other activities after. But you get the idea. It's pretty regimented for about 4 hours every morning. And then I work all day. I'm a CEO of two companies, and then I do a few doctor's visits throughout the day doing various therapies.
By the way, 50 pills, vitamins, supplements, doesn't that burn your stomach with anything else in there? Does that sometimes tough to digest?
Yeah, I'm so used to it now that it's just part of my protocol. It's not even a problem. A lot of people say, 50 pills, his liver must be damaged, but we measure everything. So if it's like, it's basic things like vitamin C, vitamin D, it's more advanced things like calcium, alpha-ketoglutarate, and bisetin. Right. And so every single thing has to fight for its life. We measure all these variables. So we even measure the supplements. So we get these third-party tested. And, most things that you see on labels are just not accurate. And most things don't have what they say they do. So we rigorously test all of the things I put into my body.
Wow. I thought the FDA would make sure they were accurate or they'd be pulled off the shelves. You're saying that's not true?
Not true at all. And so, in fact, when I started doing this a couple of years ago, I started testing everything I ate and all the supplements I took. And it is just wildly inaccurate. Not only we know, generally speaking, the food supply system is pretty dirty. It's toxic more than you can realize. So, yeah, it's a major problem. I'm just starting an endeavor right now, Don't Die Certified. We're going to build the world's largest database of tested foods for heavy metals, agrochemicals, other toxins, and we're going to open source it so everybody can get access and see what they're actually eating.
Will you eventually produce your own food and market it?
We are. So I built my own supply chain. So everything I basically try to source everything I consume myself, get it third party tested. Mm-hmm. And we're doing that. We're just actually looking at getting some farms now. So yeah, we are trying to close out the supply chain. And I make this available to others. So if you want to do what I'm doing, I make it available to you. You don't have to.
Right. And where do you get that? Where do we find out?
Like at Blueprint. Yeah. So at Blueprint, Brian Johnson, when I started doing this, you know, it went viral and people were like, hey, I want to do this, but it's just way too complicated to make it easy. So I said, okay. So we built up our entire supply chain. We get foods from all over the world. We third party test it in the laboratories and I make it available for low cost. So anybody can do what I do.
And we could see this documentary, right? We could see life and your transformation.
That's right. Yeah, it's all out there. I publish all my data. I open source all my protocols. I make all the recipes available for free. Like, I share everything for free.
Right. And so you do you run your two companies. You go through your day. We know how you start your day, the multiple testings. How do you end it?
Yeah, so it's very counterintuitive in that I make sleep my number one life priority. There's nothing more important in my entire life than sleep. It's kind of like when you're in the airplane, they're like, hey, if the cabin pressure blows, put your mask on first. They say that because if you don't do that within 7 seconds at altitude, you're going to be you'll be out. You'll be unconscious. You can't take care of anyone else when you're unconscious. The same is true of sleep. If you don't prioritize sleep, you're going to be destable in your mood. You're going to have bad judgment. You're going to be ornery. You miss these deep cleaning sessions of your brain. It's like we just have a culture of terrible sleep. And so it's just become so normalized, we don't even think about it. But sleep is my number one priority. So the things I do for that is I have my final meal of the day at least a few hours before bedtime. Mine is 9. But you're trying to drive down your resting heart rate. The lower your resting heart rate, the better you're going to sleep.
Very interesting. So a couple hours and you go down, you'll sleep for 8 hours?
8 hours and 34 minutes is my 6-month average.
All right. So you transfer your body, right? So you were how much when you weigh when you started? And what do you weigh now? And what have you found out in measuring your longevity? What has changed?
Yeah, I mean, I was 50 pounds heavier than I am now. I had dangerously high inflammation levels in my body. I was really in a bad spot. I built companies for 20 years. And so I was a typical entrepreneur where I ran my health ragged, didn't sleep well, I was fat, didn't exercise. And so I was in a pretty bad state as a 43-year-old. And now, 4 years later, I arguably have the best biomarkers of anybody in the world. I publish all of my biomarkers. Everybody can see them.
Are you reversing the aging process in some portions of your life and your body?
Yeah. So there's two things to go about doing this. One is you want to slow down your speed of aging. So when I started this, I was aging at 1, which just means for every year that passes, I age 12 months, which is normal. Now I age, my birthday is every 21 months. So my recent speed of aging is 0.57. So I've dramatically slowed down the speed at which my body ages, which means I have wrinkles, you know, less wrinkles. I age slower than other people. Then also, you're trying to reverse aging damage that has happened. That is much harder to do, although you can. You know, like there's a difference between a 10-year-old heart and an 80-year-old heart. Like you can see them structurally and functionally very different. So we're trying to restore my body back down to an 18-year-old, which is ambitious for now, but that's our goal.
And one thing you would do, you lift weights, right? You're a free weights guy. You're always working your body.
Yeah, every day, 1 hour a day, I do strength, cardio, flexibility and balance. And so they're all really important. You know, for example, we saw Mitch McConnell, you know, 82 years old, he fell down going down the stairs of the Senate. When you're 80 years old, 50% of people have one fall every year. So it's really important to maintain strength, to work on your balance, to maintain that. So yeah, as you age, you just get a higher risk of these kinds of accidents.
That is so cool, right? I don't care what you think of him. What he's doing can really help you out and educate you because not everything he's tried has worked out. It hasn't. So it's interesting, too. He gets a lot of criticism. When we come back, how he handles that criticism, how he handles people who just want to take shots at him. I don't know. Is there anything wrong with the Don't Die movement? I can't see anything wrong with it. I find it fascinating. I find Brian Johnson extremely interesting. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
You know, the first time I interviewed Brian Johnson, I only had seen the promo video on Netflix of his documentary, and I thought, I don't get it. Let me watch some other interviews. So I watched a whole bunch of interviews, and I began to realize this guy totally transformed who he was as a person by just diving into his health. And what enabled him to do that is became a self made a billionaire, I think, a billionaire or beyond that. So just interesting give and take. Then I watched the Netflix special, and I said, we got to book him for radio. So that's exactly what we did. So I wanted to sit down and talk to Brian Johnson, and we just taped it straight through. Didn't want to take a break every 8 minutes and just go straight through. And everything from what he eats to what's in his blood to any type of transfusion with his son, does that help? With his father got involved in all of it, and you see how it affects the family. And his son, by the way, ended up dropping out of school to do this Don't Die movement full-time. Here's more of my interview with Brian Johnson. He talks about the healthy living tips that we all can benefit from. So now you started this movement, was relatively lonely, but people are now jumping on board. And Don't Die is now a movement. People are trying to, are following you. Yeah. They're now subscribing after. They're subscribing what you're selling and what you're communicating. So what do you think, what have you already discovered that could help the general population through your mass experimentation?
People see this, and they say he's like an eccentric billionaire, you know, like doing this stuff on himself. Actually, the majority of these things are accessible and free. So three tips. One is make sleep your number one life priority. So go to bed on time, eat earlier and lighter. So if your bedtime's at 10:30, try to have dinner around 5 or 6. Now you may be a little bit hungry, but that's okay. You're driving down your resting heart rate. So measure your heart rate before you go to bed. Number two is go to bed at the same time every single night. Just be very rigid about the routine. Try to be off your screens. Don't look at blue light. So have like red lights and amber lights in your house, not blue light screens. And watch your stimulants. So if you have a cup of coffee at 6 p.m., that 180 milligrams, 90 milligrams is still going to be in your blood at midnight. That has a 6-hour half-life. So be careful with the stimulants. So make sleep your number one life priority. After you sleep well, exercise every single day. Even if it's 10 minutes, just going for a walk, make sure you do something. And then once you do those two things, then you take on diet. But diet is very hard. It's where people go to soothe their emotions. Food is very addicting. So diet is third after you nail sleep and after you get exercise.
Understood. So what did you try that turned out didn't pan out, where it didn't have the impact?
I mean, initially I started doing caloric restriction because that's really a interesting hypothesis in the longevity community, that if you eat fewer calories, that you can trigger a lot of longevity benefits. So I got really skinny. So then my face got really skinny. When you see someone who's really skinny, they look really old. And people are like, this guy looks really old. So I've had to revolumize my face. And so one of the therapies we did is we injected fat into my face. And when we did that, I just blew up like an absolute like balloon. I couldn't even see out of my eyes for a week. So we do make mistakes. And when we do those mistakes, we share it publicly. There's a picture of my face on the internet where I just look unrecognizable from who I am. So we share all the good, bad, and the ugly of what does work and hasn't worked.
All right. So here's some people talking to Dr. Paul Zauzau and Dr. Brad Weening, talking about what you're doing. This is what they're talking on YouTube. Cut two.
Now you mentioned 90 supplements.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Seems excessive.
It does seem like a lot. So we would say there's a handful of supplements that have good evidence, and that includes things like vitamin D, B12, calcium if you're deficient. Magnesium certainly is on the side, I'd say, of leaning towards evidence. And then you could discuss whether niacin or coenzyme Q or resveratrol, those kinds of things, but also garlic.
So starting to lose me a bit with body supplements, personally.
It's a lot.
Okay.
Yep.
Losing me a little bit. And when I watch him, I think this isn't for the common person.
No.
Okay. First, it's way too expensive. It's not practical. Yeah. And if the way you might want to approach it is like you're watching someone do a science experiment.
I think he is, okay. With an N of one, unfortunately.
Yeah, a really bad science experiment.
So you've heard critics before. What do you think about them just talking about what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, great. You know, criticism is really a wonderful attribute of science. So I welcome it. It's wonderful. Here are the things that they don't understand is that health and wellness is a lot like religion in that, you know, the King James Version of the Bible supports 100+ denominations. You can take any scriptures you want and support any argument you want. The same is true with health and wellness. You can say an infinite number of things about this and that and why this is a good idea, a bad idea. The thing that I have going for me is I'm the most measured person in human history. Now, you may say there's limitations with only being one person, but still, the fact that I measure so much and that I share the data is really interesting. So I'm trying to demonstrate a new way of health. Don't rely upon human storytelling. Rely upon data. Test yourself, look at the data, and make decisions with data. Most people are offering decisions based upon opinion. But what I'm really trying to make here is like, you know, whether or not my protocol is effective or not doesn't really matter. What I'm trying to say is we are entering into a new era of being human. Again, we can't even begin to fathom how AI is going to change our world. And the thing that comes into focus for us is we may be the first generation to not die. It is the most interesting idea in the entire world. And if we take that idea seriously, you begin with these really basic things like going to bed on time is a good idea. Measuring the markers in your body is a good idea. So I'm trying to establish really basic concepts of health and wellness that build intuitions. Like, let's not tell stories anymore. Let's actually measure ourselves.
That's so interesting because now you have all these things to measure. Your Apple Watch, you have your ring, the Aura ring. How do you feel about those devices?
They're great. I mean, anything that gives you data, a scale, measuring your body temperature, wearables. I love data. It's really helpful. So I'm very a big proponent. Like, people will wear a wearable and they'll be like, oh my God, I just saw for the first time when I drink alcohol before I go to bed, it annihilates my sleep. Yes, exactly. Like, alcohol is terrible for sleep. And then they'd learn the lesson, like, I don't want to drink alcohol because it makes me feel really bad. Whereas before, they had this idea that alcohol makes them sleepy, you know, like it's good for them. But they see the data. So yeah, data really helps inform people to make better life decisions.
Gotcha. I want you to hear what RFK said in his hearing and then see what you think. Cut six.
The first thing I've done every morning for the past 20 years is to get on my knees and pray to God that he would put me in a position to end the chronic disease epidemic. I know how to fix it. And there's nobody who will fix it the way that I do because I'm not scared of vested interests. I don't care. I'm not here because I want a position or a job. I have a very good life and a happy family.
How do you feel about what his goals are, what he believes, and how close is that to what you think?
Yeah, I take RFK is a friend of mine. I take him at his word. I think he's well-meaning. I think he's really genuinely interested in the health and wellness of others. You know, he has different opinions about various things. That's fine, like we all do. So I'm glad he's in the position. I think that he could do a lot of good.
Even if you're critical of Brian Johnson, I mean, it never gets in the sun. He's an extremely white guy. No sun at all. You have to understand that he's trying everything kind of for us, not in the official study you might get at Harvard or some of these labs over at NIH, but it's cool. Coming up next, intermittent fasting. What's the truth? How does he handle it? What does he eat in the morning and slowing down aging overall? He says he's going only aging 9 months a year. More with Brian Johnson, the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and I'm talking with Brian Johnson, the Don't Die Movement. He's got a special on Netflix right now. I don't think anyone would not benefit from watching it because of what he's doing and what you're seeing. And whatever your opinion is, he says, I'm used to getting the slings and arrows, but he went from a lonely guy doing these things by himself and his small staff. And now he's got a whole movement around it. Next, I want you to hear what he thinks about intermittent fasting and overall slowing down of aging, what works, what doesn't. And he actually does want to live forever. He thinks it's just around the corner and people can benefit from what he is learning. And that's including making your organs last longer. I asked him one time, I said, what do you think about my lifestyle? I tell him what I'm eating. He's upset because I don't sleep enough. He asked me, he goes, are you in pain? No. But this guy sleeps about at least 8 hours a day. He thinks sleep has everything to do with it. But as a morning show host, you just don't want to hear that. Here's Brian Johnson talking about intermittent fasting. So you think for the mass audience now, aside from somebody who wants to be as tested and so focused as you, there are already some things that you can relay. Can I ask you some rapid questions? Intermittent fasting, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, generally a really good practice. You know, there can be nuances, but generally speaking, I try to have all my food in a 6-hour window and I fast 18 hours a day. So I just say experiment with it and see how it goes for you. But generally speaking, yeah, there's some benefits to fasting.
Dairy.
I don't consume it myself. Every calorie fights for its life, but generally speaking, it should be okay.
Carnivore diet.
I don't eat red meat because it doesn't rank as the highest performing food for longevity. I eat foods that are the very, very best and have the most robust evidence for longevity. If you eat red meat, do your thing. That's cool. I don't because it doesn't rank high enough.
What some of the things you eat instead?
I eat legumes like beans, edamame, lentils. Vegetables, berries, nuts, seeds, extra virgin olive oil, collagen peptides. And those are all the highest ranking foods for longevity.
What do you do for protein?
I do lentils, so legumes, pea protein, hemp protein, collagen peptides.
Understood. What do you do if you go somewhere, when you get into your real world and you're invited to a party and you go into these events and you're speaking and you look down, there's nothing there that lines up with what you've been doing with this disciplined lifestyle. Do you ever so-called cheat?
Yes, I never do cheats. I never do cheat days, but I do basically, I take my food wherever I go with me. And that two reasons why. One is I'm trying to demonstrate something that has never been done. You know, just like a 4-minute mile was broken or Amelia Earhart flew across the ocean, the Atlantic. I'm trying to be the first person in human history to not die. And that means when you do that, you become, you go to the extreme to achieve your goal. So what I'm doing, I'm not saying everybody should do, but I'm really trying to make a point. We are at a turning point as a species. Like, don't be me, but you can respect me for me trying to do something extreme.
Right.
But for other people, just, yeah, go ahead.
And your son is also doing this to what degree?
Entirely. Yeah. So we eat the same foods. We have the same workout protocol. We go to bed at the same time. My 19-year-old and I we're really into this together.
And what's the reaction been from him? I know in your documentary, he goes to college and you have to drop him off, but you're going to stay in touch and he's spreading the word. So how's he doing? How's he adapting?
He took a gap year after his first year. He was studying math and physics. He's now building this with me. I mean, it's like a really interesting contemplation. Like when I went to college in 2003, you could basically imagine what you're going to study, become, and you had your entire life planned out. You knew how you were going to retire. Whereas now, if you're 19 years old, you say, what am I going to go to school for and what am I going to do in life? Nobody in the world knows what the world's going to be like in 1 year from now. We are absolutely blind to know, like, what should a person even learn? What's going to be relevant? What can AI systems do and not do? So it's really such an interesting time to be in that age group or we don't know. And so he's taking a gap year off. He's building Blueprint Don't Die with me. And so he's basically working on technical things with me.
Right. And now you're doing events together?
We are. Yeah, he does all the Don't Die summits with me. And we're trying. I mean, the goal is to build Don't Die into the world's next major ideology. Don't Die is not just like a catchy thing where we say this is fun and cute. It's a political system, economic system, social, moral, ethical. It really is like it's. Just like the U.S. created democracy as a new form of governance, Don't Die as a new way to think about ourselves as species.
All right. So I want you to hear what the food babe, Avani Hari, told me last week on One Nation. Cut 9.
We spend the most on health care. However, we have the worst health outcomes. There's a larger elephant in the room that day that was not being addressed, which was really disheartening to me, which is the fact that we have the most highest rates of chronic obesity, diabetes, and heart disease in this country. We have over 80% or close to 80% of Americans being obese. We have 40% of teenagers have anxiety or depression. We have 38% of preteens being pre-diabetic. That is unacceptable. And it should be every senator in that room's mission to reverse the chronic disease epidemic in America right now.
Stats are stats, as you say, and that's pretty daunting. Can you play a role in this?
Absolutely. I mean, so this is the thing is, you know, when I was teaching my son how to swim, I learned there are three ways to do it. One is you jump in the pool and say, jump to me. Two is you push him in the pool and say good luck. And three is you bring a friend over to show him his friend who can swim. The third way of showing him his friend who can swim is by far the most efficacious. People will be healthy when their friends are healthy. It's that easy, right? You can lecture people as much as you want. You can tell them how bad the obesity rate is. It doesn't matter. Society has to create a cultural norm where it is cool to be healthy. That's just how societal transformation happens.
All right. And lastly, when you check all your vital organs and everything that is going on with you, is there anything that you still haven't solved yet that you're looking at that you and your team are saying, yeah, I still haven't solved this one yet?
Yeah, I'm still aging. Even though I've slowed it down to 0.57, every day my body still ages. And so we need to solve that. Like we're trying to achieve longevity escape velocity where 1 year of time passes and I remain the same biological age. By slowing down my speed of aging and then reversing that damage. I think we're probably, 5 to 7 to 10 years away from being able to achieve that, but we're very close to being to doing first demonstration. So I think it's here.
So there's somebody who on YouTube that tried what Brian Johnson's doing. That's you. And here's what he found. Cut 4.
To find out, I took a few more measurements. Another DEXA scan, another VO2 max, a blood test, and another biological aging test. I definitely saw a steady decline in my weight. I lost about 20 pounds over the course of the 30 days, which was more than I expected, but maybe less than I'd hoped. Still, it was a clear win. My sleep data wasn't as clear. I don't think I saw a huge improvement in my sleep quality or quantity, which is a shame, because it's one of the most important things for your overall health. The DEXA scan was another clear win. Looking at my body composition, you could see I hadn't just lost weight, but I'd lost fat where it mattered most. The VO2 max test was a miserable slog still, but I saw a clear improvement in my overall score, going from a 34.6 to a 36.8. My blood test results were also great. My cholesterol and triglycerides were dramatically lower than my previous blood test.
So that's on Freethink on YouTube, millions of subscribers. He basically did what you did. Was he consistent from what you could tell from what he was saying?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he was doing. Like, for example, on his sleep, I don't know if he was eating his last meal just before bedtime or not, like, you know, which just could have negatively affected his sleep. So I think, generally speaking, what I hear is, like, when he was mindful of his health, he felt better and looked better. And so maybe there were a few things we could improve. But yeah, I mean, generally speaking, I think when people prioritize health and wellness, they typically get a gain. And I think he did that too. That's why I think there's probably some areas where I could help him out more, where he may or may not understand my protocol correctly.
Have you been thinking a great deal about practical ways to introduce to the 300 million Americans?
Yes, exactly. I mean, so we're doing this Don't I Certified. We're going to basically try to map the food ome in the U.S. We're going to map all the toxins in the U.S. food system. Just becoming aware. Like, for example, we did this on dark chocolate. Dark chocolate has a lot of heavy metals. And so, you know, if you look at a serving size, people don't usually restrain themselves to that. They'll eat an entire bar. It just has a dangerously high level of heavy metals. So things like that, I think, will start pointing us in the direction of knowing where bad things are. And then cultural trends of being healthy, I think, will come in and bolster. So, yeah, I think we as a country will move in a step where being healthy is cool.
Absolutely. Brian Johnson, you're helping out America while using yourself as a human experiment while reversing the aging process. It's a win-win-win. Thanks so much, Brian. Good luck at all your appearances and spreading the word from your experiments. You're saving people a lot of money by living through all this.
Great to hang out with you again, Brian.
All right, go get him, Brian. So I hope you enjoyed that interview, a little bit of a break. Almost everybody that saw the four-minute segment on One Nation, which now Sundays at 9, Sundays at 10, rather, had a million questions for me in 4 minutes. Now I'm going to get a ton of questions now that we gave you almost a complete hour of Brian Johnson and Don't Die. Do you know anybody that isn't curious about how to live longer, live healthier? Especially as you get a little bit older. In the beginning of life, you don't care. You think you're going to live forever. Brian Johnson just might.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by former GOP strategist and host of The Rich Zeoli Show, Rich Zeoli. Available now on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.